You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, it's Mike and it's another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. Welcome to the Earth Station 1 Book Club. That's right, folks. We are looking at The Stainless Steel Rat. And it's actually Kirby's pick this time. So it's an interesting one because this is Mike and I's first time reading this book. Actually, I don't think I've ever heard of this one before Kirby suggested it last time. And so it's going to be interesting to talk all about it. And, you know, speaking of a stainless steel rat, let's introduce my co-host this week. It's Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
So what con do you have going on this time, my friend?
What con? We've been doing the cons, that's for sure. We got a little bit of a break for a few weeks, but this weekend was a busy one. I mean, between May the 4th, we had Cinco de Mayo. We had, for those people who are interested in pageantry and sports, the most exciting 2 minutes of sports. We had the Kentucky Derby. We had Free Comic Book Day. We had Hulanta. There's a lot of stuff going on this past weekend.
Oh, dude. And, you know, you went to that con. I was talking about like a con job, but that's okay.
Ah, well, see, if you're talking about a con man, that's the kind of con man I am.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. You like dealing in comics, not money. I could understand that.
Believe me, I definitely have a lot more comics than I do money.
You and me both. You and me both, my friend. We would definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. So with that being said, what do we got for rants and raves this week, Mikey?
Well, I kind of mentioned it a little bit briefly in a shout out, but I thought I wanted to spend more time with it because a very iconic pop culture figure celebrated a milestone birthday in the last week or so, and that is Superman. Superman turned 80 years old because of the first appearance in Action Comics all those years ago. They just released Action Comics 1000. That was a celebration that DC had, and it had some books and everything that came along with it. But you know, this also is an anniversary year for the original Superman, the motion picture. And I just wanted to, I'd be kind of interested. I know that it's fair to say that you are a Superman fan, correct, Mike?
Oh, of course. Superman was one of my first.
So what is it about the Man of Steel? I mean, he's been around for 80 years and he's still, you know, he's one of those characters like Sherlock Holmes or like Mickey Mouse that's become, well, they're, you know, as far as he and Mickey go, they're corporate sponsored logos, obviously. So they have that sort of element to them, but they're also symbols. They're symbols known around the world. I mean, that S shield is known everywhere.
Oh, it is one of the most recognizable symbols anywhere. And it's kind of interesting because you touched on it, I think, 2 weeks ago when you were up in Cleveland and you went to go see their house of the creators of Superman. And it was just interesting because literally from his first appearance back in Action Comics number one, Superman caught the imagination of the country and later the world. And it's just amazing that, you know, Superman, you know, represents the good in humanity. He represents, you know, the positiveness and hope. And, you know, that was one of the things at when I was at Hulanta this last weekend. I was on a Justice League panel and we were talking about, you know, what Zack Snyder was missing from his movies was the positiveness of Superman, the, you know, the glow, the hope. And you had to wait towards the end of Justice League that, you know, to get that Superman back. And we didn't have that before that in any of the new DCU movies. I don't think you had that in a Superman movie probably since the Brandon Roth film. So, you know, it was just interesting.
Do you remember now what your first sort of experiences, your first awareness of Superman? Was it, obviously you were old enough that as much as the Christopher Reeve movie was iconic, we were well aware of Superman before that came out.
Oh, of course. Superman for me was comic books. It was old action comics. And then for me, it was also Superboy, because I was a huge Superboy and the Legion of Superhero fan.
Yes, that's right. You were.
And so, you know, Superman and Superboy were my things. And then being at the perfect age for the original Super Friends was my first time seeing Superman animated, actually. And it was like heaven, having all those superheroes team up and being super friends. And so it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's the thing. Superman was so iconic, and no, a lot of people, so many people knew him and were aware of him, that when they decided, oh, we can't really call it the Justice League, like it had been called in the comics for decades, they were like, we need a name for this group. I don't know. Well, they're all like friends of Superman, so we'll just call them Super Friends. like it's just... It was just a thing. I read the Superman comics. I liked Superman. I wasn't immediately compelled by him. I didn't collect him religiously. I didn't go to the store. I mean, every once in a while I'd see an interesting one. I was a DC guy. I obviously liked the Superman Batman team ups. Those were always fun. But I have very, very few copies of Superman by himself, like in Action Comics or in Superman, those early young years. But I do have quite a number of Superman family books. Mm-hmm. I did really like Supergirl. I have a few Adventure Comics featuring Supergirl in my collection that I liked a lot. And I did, the rest of the Superman family, Superboy, as you mentioned, usually the Legion was attached with that. So that was always fun. They would have Crypto would have an adventure. So that was cool. I have a couple of issues of Lois Lane, Superman's girlfriend. So I did grab a few of those. But I do remember, I think really it was the George Reeve series, the back in the 40s and 50s. Not that I was alive for that, but they were showing that in syndication.
Right. After school and stuff.
Exactly. So, and granted, it wasn't as up to the standards in my mind as the Batman 66 series, because it wasn't a lot as colorful. Some of them really weren't as colorful because they were black and white. But they were still fun. It was still always cool watching Superman like burst through a wall or something. And the way that they made him fly looked pretty good for the time. And actually it was fine for me too. I wasn't like, oh man, that looks stupid.
Well, for me, it was interesting though, because like you just said though, because Superman, you know, always fought gangsters and, you know, mob bosses and such on the TV show, where Batman actually had the villains from the comic book.
Right.
Because you never saw George Reeves' Superman go up against Lex Luthor or Brainiac or one of those villains.
Nope.
And so...
He was always just against, like, you know, a guy who just was a thug.
Well, exactly. You know, I remember, though, seeing, you know, Superman versus the Martians. And, you know, so you got him fighting aliens at least, but then, you know, it was just like, I think Superman's greatest threat from the TV show was actually Lucy.
Or, you mean Lois finding out his identity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
so go ahead.
No, it was awesome. But then, you know, as we got a little bit older, you know, after schools and stuff, they started having, you know, syndication had the late 1960s cartoons with the Batman and Aquaman and Superman, you know, stuff on it. And it was awesome.
Yeah. I do remember the first time I saw the Flight cartoons. I was really impressed with those. They had a great look to them. They were pretty awesome. I liked that too. And yeah, I was a big fan of the Justice League with him in it. So when he wasn't there, it didn't feel quite like the League to me. If it didn't have the Trinity in it, like when the League didn't have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, I was kind of like, this is not really okay. I mean, it's okay, but it's not what I paying my 35 cents for, sir. So I liked him as a leadership character. I liked him as a, you know, team member, but I didn't like him enough to follow his adventures religiously. But I have read some great Superman stories over the years. The movies have been entertaining. Superman 2 is still, I think, my favorite of all the Superman movies ever. It's just I loved it. The score by John Williams, that theme, the Superman theme, gives me goosebumps. I did watch Smallville for years. I liked that show a lot. I have been, I didn't watch Lois and Clark. I didn't watch the Superboy series when it was on syndication. So I kind of go hot and cold with Superman. There's a lot of times I like him, and there's a lot of times where I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm not really looking for a Superman in my life right now.
Oh, I could totally understand that. It was interesting. Superman and I always came back and forth with each other. I remember, I think I was like 8 or 9, my dad got me a copy of The Greatest Superman Stories Ever Told. So that's where I got introduced to Superman Red, Superman Blue, or the time when Lex Luthor and Brainiac actually won. And, you know, just stories like that, or Supergirl's first appearance, and, you know, stuff from the 1960s and 1950s, and some of even Action Comics number 1 was in that storyline. So it was neat to see Superman evolve over that time, or, you know, seeing some of like the Neil Adams covers, or when, you know, Superman stopped working for the Daily Planet and went to go work at what, WGBS or something like that. He became a TV reporter, and he became the mobile TV reporter. He went around in a van, so it was easier for him to switch out into Superman. And he had his little mobile studio and everything. It was just awesome what they tried to do over the years with him. And, you know, when Clark Kent was wearing leisure suits and stuff in the 70s, it was awesome.
If you had to select, if somebody out there was like, Mike, what Superman stories, and it can be in any medium, what Superman stories are your personal, like, 2 or 3 favorites?
Oh, dude, there's way too many of those. I had mentioned Superman Blue and Superman Red was always one of my favorites.
Now, you're talking about like the original, the Lightning ones, no. When they were split in two, right?
I didn't even read those, so no. No, I'm talking about Superman Blue, Superman Red from the 1960s.
Right. Just want to clarify.
Yeah.
Remember, we've got some younger listeners.
No, and it's understandable. So those stories were amazing. You know, they used to do a lot of imaginary stories with Superman in the 60s. You know, what happens if, you know, Superman married Lois Lane and, you know, stuff like that. You know, I have to say some of the Kerry Bates stuff, there was a novel done in the 1970s called Superman Last Son of Krypton. And that was an amazing story. And then also, you know, Superman, probably I'd have to say one of my favorites was the last Silver Age Superman story. It was right after Crisis, and I think it was who wrote it? The one who did Watchmen wrote it.
Alan Moore
wrote that storyline.
Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow?
Yes. That was one of my favorites. And then, you know, then there was also the Superman. There was a Superman annual Mongol trapped Superman with the rose, the big plant that gave him the fantasy. And that's
my pick for my favorite Superman story. It's what do you get for the man who has everything?
Exactly.
Awesome
story.
Oh, so good. So good. And not only for Batman, but I mean, not only for Superman, but as a Trinity story, especially with the Justice League cartoon adaptation of it was just phenomenal. I love that. And I'm going to pick also Superman 2 because that's my favorite Superman movie. And as far as the comics, one of my favorite comic reads is Man of All Seasons, Superman of All Seasons.
I could see that. That's a good one.
Which is by Tim Sale Art with, I think Loeb wrote that. It's just a solid, good Superman pick. I really also like Grant Morrison's run on All-Star Superman. I thought that was really phenomenal. So
one of my most iconic Superman images, though, is from Kingdom Come. When Superman comes back for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and that, of course, you know, is just stunning art anyway. Because it's
Alex Ross
stuff. And he's like holding Superman, you know, these young superheroes are just fighting each other because they don't have anything else to do. And they're putting civilians in harm's way. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Superman comes back.
Boom.
And he's like looking at them. And the look he has is just like, oh, crap. And it's just amazing.
Two last Superman questions for you. One, are you watching Krypton?
I am not watching Krypton.
I'm not watching Krypton either.
No. I've heard it isn't all that great. I heard the high point of Krypton actually is Adam Strange. And which is pretty, you know, I love the character, but I'm not going to watch it because of that.
I don't know. I'm waiting. I don't know. I've heard mixed things from various people, so I'm kind of waiting maybe to binge it at some point. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Right now I've got a lot of other things to do. So I don't know if I'll, I'll give it. And the other thing is, I know that you're primarily out of comics, but, are you at all curious about Bendis writing Superman now?
I am curious. I picked up Action Comics 1000 and it was just interesting to, you know, see his first shot at the story and what they're proposing from reading interviews and such. And I might pick it up when it comes out in trade because I'm not picking up regular comics monthly anymore anyway.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in the trade. You know, a little Jewish boy from Cleveland writing Superman. Kind of comes all full circle, doesn't it?
Hey, just anyone writing Superman that's decent is good. Because, you know, they've had some real stinkers over the years.
Well, it's been a mixed bag to be sure. So, but he seems to be in good hands now. So I'm very, he's still going to be the benchmark. You know, for our superheroes. So it really does, in a lot of ways, begin with him. And who knows, it might end with him as well. So happy birthday, Superman. It's belated, but we love you, man.
Yay, happy birthday, Supes. The big red S is 80. Wow.
80, yep. And, you know, he doesn't really look a day over 40.
Ba-dum-bum. And thank goodness they brought back the Superman red trunks over the outside.
They mean hope.
Is that what it means? I wonder if I can get away with that at work. You know, it means hope, sir. Please, security, keep back. Keep back. No. I don't think it would work, Mikey. I really don't. Just saying.
What happens on the station stays on the station.
Oh, thank God. All right. Well, we want to hear from you. What are your favorite Superman memories? We definitely want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seats.
This is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. Well, hopefully all of you survived the Infinity War and were spared by Thanos. Thanos did not spare the box office, however, and Infinity War once again pretty much destroyed all of its competition. And it looks like it will top the box office again this coming weekend. There's not really a lot of new movies coming out until we have Deadpool in a couple weeks, but there are a few smaller wide releases, so let's go ahead and take a quick look at those. We have the comedy Life of the Party, starring Melissa McCarthy as a middle-aged mom who decides to go back to college. And, as expected in a Melissa McCarthy movie, crazy hijinks ensue. This one does look kind of funny. It's not one that I'd necessarily rush out to see in the theater or pay full ticket price for, but I'll probably check it out once it comes to Redbox. And then we also have Breaking In, could be some interesting Mother's Day programming, which stars Gabrielle Union as a mom trying to rescue her children being held hostage. As for DVDs this week, it looks like Thanos has scared away a lot of the new DVD releases as well, and pretty much what we have is 50 Shades Freed, which is the final movie in the 50 Shades of Grey franchise, and that's about all I have to say about that one. And that's pretty much it, although we have lots of cool movies coming out this summer, so stay tuned as the summer movie season really starts to get underway. And if you're looking for more entertainment-related content in the meantime, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com.
Hey everyone, we're here with the Geek Seek segment, and this time we have our friend Dan Klink. Welcome, Dan. How are you?
Hey, doing good, Mike. And Mike, how are you guys doing tonight?
Great, man. I had a great weekend. I hope you did as well, and welcome to the mothership.
Yes, excellent. Beam me up.
For those people that may not be familiar with you and the Nerd Bliss podcast, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
All right, well, I'm Dan. And I'm over there at the Nerd Bliss podcast, bringing some of the local South Carolina upstate geekery over the internet airwaves to y'all. We have a good show. Hope you can all listen. I'm a nerd. That's why I'm here. That's what got me through the door. I collect toys because I guess I have a lot of childhood damage I'm trying to compensate for. Got a couple of kids. They're cool. Wife, she's rad. And yeah, life is good.
What got you into podcasting?
My friend Chris Jones, and actually his wife Tina Jones, got me over there at the beginning of this year. Actually, they started up last year, and they had me on as a guest, and I just haven't left.
I admire that strategy. I have used that strategy myself. So that's exactly what I did here. Make yourself comfortable, and they're stuck with you.
Yes, exactly. I'm like a vampire. You invite me in and you're screwed.
Well, exactly. Look, 8 years later, we still have Mike Gordon. I opened the door for him and look what happened.
Mike knows what's up. Mike knows what time it is. Yeah.
That's right. Very cool. Well, what are some of your main interests, geeky interests? You mentioned toys, but do you have a certain like genre, show, book series, anything like that that really, you know, turns your crank?
Yeah, there's a lot, I suppose, but it always comes back to Star Wars and Star Trek equally. Yeah, I've been going real hard for Marvel lately. Been loving what they've been doing, what Disney's been throwing up on the screen.
Sure.
I've started collecting little bits of that. I have pretty much every Black Panther figure ever made out of the Legacy series.
Wow.
I'll shoot you some photos. I like to, I have fun with them. I make little scenes and everything.
You take them out of the box and play with them, do you?
Yes, absolutely.
Very nice. Very nice. We encourage that kind of behavior.
Now, again, I'm trying to compensate for some deep, deep child, you know, bullshit. So, you know, I got to rip them open, got to play with them. Yeah. I'll regret it when I'm 90, I'm sure.
While I'm attracted to the new stuff, I got to tell you, I think I'm spending most of my later years trying to get the stuff I had when I was a kid. somehow. It's like,
totally.
Why did I let that stuff go?
Right. Yeah. Why did I trade those G.I. Joes for that Bon Jovi tape? You know,
what was I thinking?
I hear you. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Who knew they were? It was all going to be free on Spotify like decades later.
Exactly. Yeah.
All that money I spent on music.
Now, I should have played the long game on that one. Yeah.
We had no clue.
Yeah.
You mentioned Star Wars and Star Trek. How far do you go back? Is it the original trilogy for Star Wars? Is it the original series? Is it Next Generation? What's your entry point to those?
Well, original trilogy, you know, first movies I ever saw was Return of the Jedi in 83 in the theater. Empire Strikes Back. They released it a few weeks before Return of the Jedi as a special. Let's get everybody caught up.
That's cool.
Gave me nightmares. Let's see. The original series as a kid, my older brother really got me into that. And it was admittedly Uhura that kept my attention. But in terms of actually being a fan and sitting down every week, it was Next Generation.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, there it is.
Well, very cool. Well, and, you know, I mean, so many times, like for me growing up, there was the big, you know, you couldn't be interested in both, you know, you couldn't dig both Star Wars and Star Trek. So you had to choose sides. I did play it down the middle. I said, why can't you like both? I get it. I like DC and Marvel. What's wrong with you people? So
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Well, then that you're the third human being I know that goes equally both. That is also bi-curious when it comes to both. Both Star Wars Trek. Yes.
Yeah. To me, they're different enough. They offer something different enough that I can enjoy both of them for their own merits. There's no competition for me.
Oh, same here. I mean, Star Wars has more in common with Lord of the Rings than it ever will with Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Apples and Windex.
Now, I can understand from a budgetary perspective, you might want to just select one. And that's gotten me into trouble a few times. It's like, oh, I've got this huge Star Trek collection. And now this, well, what do I do? Where do I show off first? You know,
that is an excellent, that is maybe the third best question I've ever been asked. Yes. Well, Star Wars, it actually came down to quality. Star Wars. Well, one, Star Wars has just a mountain of product compared to Star Trek.
It's true.
And Star Trek has a history of putting out some, in terms of toys, some pretty lame stuff.
Yeah,
pretty, pretty weak offerings. I've been able to pick up what I like the old Galoob, the 1987-88 3¾ Next Generation figures they put out.
Yep.
Not the best, but I can now have Data making out with C-3PO, which is cool. A couple of the
We know at least one is fully functional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know,
guess you only need one.
It's a deeper robot love. They put on a Flaming Lips album, and they figure it out. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, speaking of figuring it out, I think Mike, I think he's ready to. I think he's all primed and ready to go for the geek seat.
Well, I just got a note from our friends over at Nerd Bliss, and they said, "Don't be gentle on him."
Good. See, they know me. They love me.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Dan. How can you hate as much as you do? And I'm like Cap. I hate myself the most.
Well, there you go.
On your questions. God, I hope that came across as funny. It might not have. Anyway, let's do this.
I heard crickets there for a second, so I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I'm going on tour this summer. I'm trying out some new material. You know, I appreciate your patience.
Oh, we have tons of that, so don't worry about that part.
Next.
All right, man. Your first question in the geek seat. But first, Mike, tie him up.
He is tied, man. That's what I do, man. I see when I'm not just asking questions here, man. I'm maneuvering. I'm like, you know, I'm working it. I've got this. You know, Mike, I've got this down to a science.
Oh, don't I know that? Don't I know that?
Before they know it, by the time I'm ready to cue you in, they are ready and tied up and good to go.
Excellent, sir. All right, Dan, your first question then. What was your favorite geek out moment?
My favorite geek out moment was back in, you know, it had to have been 2010, I think. It was at Disneyland We had season tickets back in the day, and they had just re-released Captain EO. You're familiar with Captain EO?
Yes.
Okay, Michael Jackson, George Lucas was involved, Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah, they brought it back, the tribute, after Michael Jackson had passed. And the first day it had come back, or at least when we were there, I spent hours just watching it over and over and over again. And I was bawling, really having a moment. Huge Michael Jackson, Jackson 5 fan. It was really sad and kind of hard to watch. My wife eventually took our son and they went to go do Disney stuff. And I just kept watching. And probably after the fifth time, I walked out of the theater bawling, still bawling. And across the crowd was another young woman who had just walked out of the same showing, who was also bawling, standing there alone in a crowd by herself, just bawling. And we made eye contact. And we just kind of moved to each other and held each other for a minute. And we just cried. After that, it was, hey, you okay? I'm okay. You okay? I think I'm going to be okay. I'm okay.
Okay, then.
And I felt, and then it was okay. It was really cathartic. And, you know, then I went and wrote Space Mountain, and it was all good.
I think that happens with most people there. I do understand.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. Little Captain EO, little Space Mountain, little catharsis. Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen Captain EO. I don't think it was ever playing when I was at Disney.
Yeah.
So I think I don't think I've ever, and it's not playing there now, right?
No. It was really cool when they brought it back because they got rid of that Honey, I Wasted Your Time movie. And then Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Exactly.
Brought it back, but you had like the moving seats now. So when the dancers are moving, the seats were moving. Ugh, I'm getting all kind of something just thinking about it. It was really badass. But no, a couple of years ago, you know, they brought it back for like a good 5 years. And then it was like, hey, you know, we need to find another way to make money. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, awesome. That's a pretty powerful moment. I like that.
Oh, well, you're welcome. It was all for you, Mike.
Oh, gosh. Wow. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
That would have to be the toxically masculine and racist response to Star Wars, the Disney Star Wars, Star Trek Discovery, the new Doctor Who, Mad Max. I don't know if that's a single moment in time. I can point out a few. But that overarching moment in realizing that the geeks don't share those same underlying values of the products that they follow. That makes any sense?
No, of course. Absolutely. Very much so.
Absolutely.
Actually, I did a panel about that over the weekend.
Mm. No kidding.
What was that?
I'd like to have been there. I would like to have been there. I would have had a lot of inflammatory things to add.
Oh, I'm sure you would have.
Yeah, it's one of those head scratchers, particularly when, you know, like Star Trek. How can you be a Star Trek fan and think this way?
Exactly.
Don't you understand? Don't you understand the vision at all?
What geeks you out the most, though?
What geeks me out the most? Well, that's an excellent question there, Mike. Yeah, bring up my notes here real quick. What geeks me out the most? When sci-fi and fantasy, when they draw upon, you know, relevant and powerful, when they draw powerful parallels between what's happening now and, you know, the narrative that they're speaking, that they're laying down. Like the original Trek, you know, of course, you know, morality tales and whatnot. When they're able to make, when these geek things we love tie themselves in to our everyday condition, I think it's probably most satisfying. My favorite examples would be Next Generation, the episode The Drumhead, or Deep Space Nine, Far Beyond the Stars, were some of my favorites, where, you know, we got to see not only lasers and spaceships, but also social relevance.
That's very cool.
Yeah, thanks.
What turns your geek off?
Oh, it turns my geek off. Well, this may tie into question number two, but it's actually conservatives who claim to be Star Trek fans, actually. You know, the party of no versus the future of yes. You know, wealth consolidation and disenfranchisement versus a socialistic meritocracy.
Well, they just go, it's just science fiction anyway. Still love it.
Why you? Shit. Okay. All right. Well, then go watch Andromeda, bro. Okay. Come on. You know, Babylon 5 is always waiting for you. You know, why, you know, don't sully my Trek, or at least keep it to yourself. You know,
I do understand that one. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Lando Calrissian.
What about Lando?
Oh, well, I've got a whole encyclopedia set on that. What, you mean you've never heard of his little maneuver at the Battle of Tanav? I mean, why not? I'm kidding. That was a throwaway line in Jedi. Most people don't catch it. Well, okay. He made arguably one of the hardest choices in all of Star Wars. Right? Turn over his buddy to save millions. I mean, who else had a choice like that? I mean, what, Luke had to choose not to sleep with his sister? You know, Han had to choose not to be a dick. You know, Lando had some real, real heavy things to, he duped Vader, one man show. He got his cake and he ate it too. He saved. Okay, Han's a big boy. He can go, you know, be frozen with Jabba. But he got Luke. Mark Hamill comes before Harrison Ford in the billing, right? He saved Luke. Made it out of there.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
And new Lando. I mean, all I have to say, you know, you got Donald Glover, Childish Gambino. You know, he performs as well. He's a performer, a singer. Have you seen the new This Is America video that he did?
Yes.
Okay. See, reason number 285, why Lando is my favorite.
That's fair. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Lando Calrissian. Never meet your heroes. Just check it out. Check it out. Okay, this is how it would go down. All right. We'd step out to the club. He'd be my ride. We'd step out. End of the night. He's gone. My ride is gone. My fucking date is gone. Okay. That's Lando. And I like to wear t-shirts. You know, that man can pull off a cape. And he can pull it off well. He'd be hating all over my everything. So, yeah. Don't meet your heroes, kids. Don't do it.
Okay. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Actually, that's the first time anyone's used that one. That's good.
Oh, my dad used to look at me randomly when I was a kid and just say that, and I would just fall down laughing every time.
I would thought he was just reading the plaque off the station bar, the lounge over here in the station.
I thought he was referring to Greenville, but that's okay.
Hey, you've never seen him at the town I'm from.
Okay. What is your ideal geek occupation, man?
All right. Now I'm assuming I took this as what is my favorite fictional or my geek occupation. You know, the pleasure planet Ryza, I would be a boy toy on Ryza.
Fair enough. I could definitely see that. And, you know, having met you, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, cool. And, you know, I'm not, it's the 23rd century, you know, male, female, you don't even have to be bipedal. You know, it's my job. I'm here to help. I'm just here to make you comfortable. You know, I love my job. I love my job.
That's good to know. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
The STD specialist on Ryza.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lieutenant Jones. You got space chlamydia. Oh, damn you, poor Dan. Yeah. Yeah, it'd get messy. I mean, I know they got hypo sprays and all that, but.
Well, that's how it would be
like. I'm guessing Ryza has a lot of jobs that would fill that category.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Well, that's why Bones and Kirk get along so well.
Yeah, there you go. Cures the hangovers and penicillin. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Ready.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
To be tapped to write the screenplay for the Robotech live action movie.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Thank you. Hey, if you know anybody down Hollywood way, you let them know.
Oh, they all listen to the show, so I'm sure they will be checking that out.
I think I heard Spielberg was looking at that property at one point, but I don't know if that's still a thing.
Yeah, you know, everyone has looked at that property. I mean, you want to talk about space STDs. Everyone's had a go at Robotech in Hollywood. It's kind of ridiculous. And nobody knows what to do with it. I don't know if there's still any legal issues between that and Macross. The fact that the first third of what we know of as Robotech is tied to the Japanese property of Macross, and that is where all of your iconic imagery comes from. That's where the entire selling point is. So who knows? But when they figure it out, I'm standing by. So.
Wow. That's amazing. That is amazing, my friend. Yeah. Well, Dan, congratulations, sir. You've made it through the geek seat.
Yay!
Mr. Right. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $19.50.
Oh, yeah. All right. I'm going to have to figure out something else that I want for my birthday now. Awesome. Very cool. Well, send me the coupon. I'm ready to go. Nice. Well, thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on the show and, you know, for being part of the network now. I mean, it's great to have Nerdbliss as part of the family.
Oh, hey, thank you. Yeah, no, over the Nerdbliss podcast, we usually drop on Fridays. Y'all should check it out. We're really happy with being a part of the ESO network. We really like you guys, love you guys, and look forward to continuing to make magic and maybe one day some money with y'all.
Money? What is this money you speak of?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right.
I don't think he read the fine print, Mike.
No, I don't think he did.
I don't think when any of us bought that switchboard, that microphone, none of us read the fine print. Yeah.
I can almost guarantee it. Right? Yeah.
That's right.
It's called ESO Love. That's it. Yeah. It's all about doing it for the passion. Yeah. There we go. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Stainless Steel Rat Book Review.
Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Hey, this is Michelle. Lots of news. Bruce Springsteen has been awarded a special Tony for his residency that he's been playing on Broadway since last October, called, appropriately, Springsteen on Broadway. He was going to play this for 6 weeks. He added some weeks, added some more weeks, and now it's not going to wrap up till December, and 236 shows, and now he's got a Tony Award. If you count the special Tonys, which, from what I can tell, most people seem to, this makes Springsteen a Grammy Oscar Tony winner. He just needs an Emmy to become the EGOT. That shouldn't be hard. Just do a Netflix special and you're golden. Steven Tyler, John Legend, and T.I. were all also nominated for Tonys for work on the SpongeBob SquarePants musical. I had no idea. And the Donna Summer musical, got two nominations for the leading and supporting actress roles. And when I was looking up all this stuff about EGOTs, I discovered something that rocked my world. Julie Andrews doesn't have a Tony. Bruce Springsteen's got a special one, Steven Tyler's nominated, and Julie Andrews does not have a Tony. What is up with that? Speaking of musicals, Labyrinth. There's a Labyrinth comic book in the works from Simon Spurrier and Daniel Bayliss with Jareth's origin story. And Jim Henson's son Brian says that while a movie sequel is unlikely, a musical is definitely in the works, possibly slated to go to London's West End. He talked about how Bowie came to the original movie project with these demos for the songs, and because this is Bowie, they weren't just stuff he tossed off in the basement. They were fully produced with a boys' choir. And he also says he doesn't know what happened to them. Okay. Hopefully they're archived somewhere and they will turn up, because those would be phenomenal to hear. More stuff from the world of musicals. The April Hamill Drops came out April 30th. It's the original draft of Burn with extra additional lyrics, pinpointing Eliza's frame of mind in Act Two. And if you know Hamilton, you know that that's one pissed off Eliza. It's sung by all five actresses currently playing the role, London, Broadway, Chicago, and both touring companies. There's one line in there in particular. I heard it and I just stopped and I went, whoa. And turns out most of the world that knows Hamilton, everybody is going, whoa, with that line too. It's more current sounding production, like the mixtape stuff and a lot of the Hamill drops, as opposed to just a show tune. Great vocal performances and definitely worth checking out at hamilldrops.com. Lots of new issues and reissues and tours coming up. Guns N' Roses are putting out Appetite for Destruction, remastered with 49 previously unreleased songs and 73 tracks in all. It's going to take 4 CDs and 7 180 gram vinyl LPs. Also 2 EPs, one of live tracks, one of B-sides. And box sets, replica memorabilia, and a 96-page photo book with illustrations for each song and photos from Axl's collection. They are kicking off a European tour, Not in This Lifetime tour, coming up June 3rd in Berlin. And Death Cab for Cutie have put up a teaser trailer for a new album to follow up Kintsugi from 2015. You can view that trailer at deathcabforcutie.com. It's supposed to come out in August. There will be a tour to follow with dates across the U.S. A couple of early August dates, Boise, Idaho, and Missoula, Montana. And then they take a long break and then hit the rest of the national tour September and October. Florence and the Machine put out a new track for Record Store Day last month. It's called Sky Full of Song. And the B-side was a recording of a poem called New York Poem for Polly. That track was taken from a book of lyrics, poetry, and art that Florence Welch is publishing on July 5th. The Machine is heading out on a lot of festivals this summer, so you have a lot of chances to catch them and hopefully a new album by the end of the year. And when you're out shopping for albums, there is a new app called Record Player, and it's like Shazam or SoundHound for album covers. You take a picture of the album cover and the app will match it up to a Spotify stream so you can check it out. You can find that app for download at recordplayer.glitch.me, and you can also check out the demo there. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment. Blog is iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will check you out next week.
In a world where podcasters talk about the same old pop culture topics, two heroes must rise to bring forth a new era of podcast entertainment. The Cigar Nerds Podcast. Movie reviews, pop culture debates, news, science, and even beer reviews. We're stranger than Stranger Things and funnier than an evil sewer clown. CigarNerdPodcast.com.
We all smoke down here, Georgie.
Until somebody loves you. Go out and get yourself somebody. Somebody to love.
Welcome back, everyone. And now it's time for another edition of the Earth Station One Book Club. This time we had a pick from our good friend Kirby, who's joined us again. Kirby, welcome back to the station.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And this entry was your choice for the book club. And it is The Stainless Steel Rat by Harry Harrison. The book was written, I think it originally came out in 1961. Is that correct?
1961, yes.
Okay. So, yeah, it looks like it was kind of a combination of a couple short stories that were earlier, in earlier form, but it came out as a... Yeah, it came out as a novel in 1961. So first of all, tell us a little bit about your history with this particular novel and why you chose it.
Well, first of all, I really enjoy humorous science fiction. And this is one of the very first such novels that I ever read. I probably read this when I was 17, 16, somewhere around then. And just had a great deal of fun with it. Started devouring all of Harry Harrison's works. If you don't know who Harry Harrison was, he wrote something that we're all very familiar with, a very famous novel from 1966 called Make Room, Make Room, which you may also know as Soylent Green.
Wow. Okay.
Really? I did not know that.
Yes. So we're talking a very famous science fiction writer here. But he also did an awful lot of humorous science fiction. And besides this is the first of a long series of novels that he actually waited like 12 years, something like that, before the second one. And then he was cranking them out for a long time. He unfortunately died in 2012. He also wrote another humorous novel called Bill the Galactic Hero, which is a send up of all those space opera things. It's similar to A Stainless Steel Rat, but more the I think he was trying to spoof Heinlein's Starship Troopers.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm familiar with the title of Bill the Galactic Hero. And the only other thing I knew about Harry Harrison is that at one point he wrote Flash Gordon's the newspaper strips.
Oh yes.
Just for I think a couple years, or no, maybe it was more than that. But I had no idea that that he was so prolific, you know, especially regarding this series, which I had never heard of until you mentioned it. And then to find out that there were, I think, a total of 12 novels in all. And then there's like a 13th short story or something like that.
And comics and games, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I picked it, the reason that it kicked over I think I texted to Mike Faber a whole list of possibilities a few months ago, things I was thinking of as my pick this time. What kicked me for this one was when we did Ready Player One a few months ago, because the whole section where Wade is in the real world infiltrating IOI, that the way he prepared for it and did that whole bit was very similar to the way that Jim DeGrees thinks things through. I hope you agree.
I could see that. Now that, you know, I didn't make the connection when I was reading it, but I can see that. I definitely can see that.
And Artemis, I have a feeling that Ernest Cline got the idea for Artemis partially from Angelina with the port wine stain.
Oh, very much so. I saw that right when I was reading this book earlier today. I was like, wait a minute, that's just like Artemis.
Right. So this book, I believe, influenced Ready Player One. And so when we went through Ready Player One, I just clicked on that, and I thought, hey, and I asked you guys if you'd ever heard of it. You hadn't. I wanted to give you a chance to read one of my favorite novels.
Well, I appreciate it. It's amazing to me that, you know, still after all these years, not that I pretend to know everything, but, you know, you hear so much and you're around a culture so much that when you hear about something that, oh yeah, there's like 13 novels and of this thing, and you're like, really? That's a lot. Like, and how come I've never heard of it? You know? So it's one of those things that I was very curious about. Yeah. And so for those people who don't know, and we're going to go into spoiler territory with the novel, but if you want a quick a non-spoiler
55-year-old or older novel,
well, this is a book club, so yeah, we are going to go into the actual ins and outs of the novel, but I wanted to, you know, for those people like us or who hadn't heard of it before, who are just kind of listening to this going, what's this all about? The stainless steel rat is not an actual rat. It's not an actual animal. It's a nom de plume, shall I say, an alias of Slippery Jim, James DeGrees. Is that how we pronounce it? Yeah.
I mean, you pronounce it however you want to. I pronounce it DeGrees, but
yeah,
I'm not sure. James Boulevard DeGrees or DeGrees.
He is a master of disguise. He's a thief. He's a con artist. He's a strategist. He's a very, very skilled, smart individual, very confident. One of the most confident characters, I think, especially from the first person viewpoint of view that I've ever read. The story is told in tongue in cheek. So there's a lot of humor to it. It's hard to take the main character seriously, but yet there are some moments in there and here where things kind of get real, you know, like, and he does have a code.
He has a very strong sense of morality.
He also has a sense of honor too.
Yes.
Yeah. He doesn't mind. Obviously, laws are for fools in certain respect, but even the crimes that he commits are, I don't want to say victimless, but they're pretty much these crimes where he loves stealing from banks, for example, but he knows that the banks will just write it off and nobody actually gets hurt and nobody's savings are lost or that kind of thing. He's not stealing from babies, that kind of thing. He's not robbing the poor to feed his rich, you know, self.
When he cases the bank that he robs in this particular novel, he makes sure there are no children in there.
Well, also make sure you remind and let the listeners at home know, this is basically a universe where crime is pretty much gone.
Yes.
It's true. Yeah.
And, you know, basically he's a genetic misfit who, you know, somehow he reverted to, you know, more curious paths, you could say.
Yeah, he's wired a little different. And he won't kill. Although that does come up in this first novel here, but by and large his code is that he will not murder people. He's not that guy. He's very repulsed by the idea.
I'm trying to remember because it's been a while since I read the other books, but I believe that the one guy he accidentally kills in this novel may be the only person he even accidentally kills.
Wow. So we're going to get into it, in the actual plot of this. So it starts off with him, he's on the job, right? He's just finished up a job, right? Is that my take on the first opening of it?
No, he was in the middle of a con scheme that he was doing and the police robot had come to, you know, confront him on it.
Yes, that's what it was. It was just at the tail end where the police robot was on his tail, so to speak.
Oh, that's one of the things about this universe. I that's kind of fun is that there's robots, but there's also computers that are kind of dumb.
And Harry doesn't spend a lot of time explaining all of how this future galactic society really works. He doesn't spend a lot of time world building. He doesn't spend a lot of time letting you know exactly how he gives you very minimal information on all of this, which is, it makes it an easy read.
Yes.
Although it's sometimes, and it actually, you know, for all these like huge tomes of world building novels and fantasy and science fiction that we get that's out there, it's kind of refreshing just to read this almost pulpy kind of sci-fi tale that's just gets down to the nitty-gritty stuff, yeah, and allows your imagination to fill in the rest.
Yeah, I'll have to admit that I am not a fan of Foundation because of that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I get bogged down reading Asimov's Foundation trilogy. Whereas this is nice and fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely fun. It's a quick read. This first novel anyway. I don't know about the others, but the first novel is pretty short. So you can tear through it. And like I said, he doesn't spend a lot of time, you know, like I said, world building and telling you all this unnecessary information, really. Although I was kind of curious as to how, like, he just kind of, like, there's some things like the technology that he just kind of mentions and you're like, oh, I'd like to know a little bit how that works. The communication devices, which seem to use telepathy.
Yes. This
which he just sort of like mentions it. And I'm just kind of, he just throws it out there. And I'm kind of like, wait, can we pause for a second and talk about a little bit how that works?
There's actually more of that. If you continue reading, reading some of the other novels, you'll get a little more of it. Again, he's just taking a trope from a lot of science fiction from the period, where basically that to communicate like that is the only way to communicate, to get around the distances of the galaxy and have things, without going through extreme time dilation issues.
So he's on the run. He has pulled off this pretty successful heist, and he's on the run. And we quickly find out, really quickly in the book, that as confident as he is, as masterful as he is, he gets played. He plays right into the hands of the Special Corps.
The Special Corps, yes. And he's the man at the top of the Special Corps, Harold Peters Inskip, was once known as Inskip the Uncatchable, and was a similar criminal. And the Special Corps tends to recruit criminals to fight crime.
Mm-hmm. In fact, Inskip himself was a master criminal.
Mm-hmm.
The, exactly. I think, quote unquote, greatest crook in the galaxy, if you want.
Yes.
Well, exactly. And it's funny because Slippery Jim thought he was the biggest and the best, and then he met this guy.
Yeah. But because this guy really, he played right into his hands.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And eventually, if you get down to reading some of the other ones, the 1985 novel, Stainless Steel Rat is Born, you discover where Jim learned his trade from a criminal called the Bishop, who's a very interesting character himself. And that's where he got his moral code.
I'm going to state my first negative comment about the book. I don't like Harrison's names. I think his names, like when I'm reading the book, it's everything's going along smoothly. I'm just like, you know, I'm just tearing through it. But whenever I get to one of his names, it's like a hard nail in the tire. It just stops me cold. And I'm like, what is that? Like, how do you pronounce that? Like, what kind of name is that? Like,
well, some of them are jokes. Red and Runt.
Sure. Red and Runt. Yes.
Oh, yeah. You could tell some of the names were just puns or, you know, just like plays on other things. And that was part of the fun of the book, though.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I just wish the names were a little bit smoother. Like they just kind of like stood out to me. Like, oh, I don't, you know, we all know I enjoy a good pun, but to me, I guess they weren't punny enough. You know, for a guy that like Harry Harrison's got a great alliteration name, like himself.
Yes.
Like, you know, like he should.
Hey, he's a Marvel superhero.
Exactly. Right. But, you know, I thought, well, you know, maybe that's why, too. Maybe, you know, it's just one of those things he puts in there. I don't know if his other novels. So from a guy who's also written Bill, the Galactic Hero, I kind of expected some, you know, some I don't know, smoother sounding names, but
Some of the names in Bill, the Galactic Hero, are also similar to this. Now, one thing that is not doesn't really show up in this first novel, that shows up in some of the later novels, is Harrison himself was a Esperanto expert. And in the later novels, it's established that Jim DeGrees mostly speaks Esperanto.
Gotcha. Yeah, that would be interesting. Which makes me think of William Shatner. So let me ask you. Okay, so the character of the stainless steel rat himself, DeGrees, what did you guys think of him overall? Did you guys have a picture in your head of what he might look like? Did you like him? Did you not like him? Was he fun to follow around? Mike, what do you think?
Oh, I thought he was very, very fun to follow around. I liked the character. Even though he's cocky and everything, it was very interesting to see, you know, it was him, you know, that you were rooting for the whole time.
Yes.
I wanted to see him succeed. I wanted to see him, you know, fall for this woman. And I loved, you know, we haven't even talked about her yet.
No, we're getting there.
Okay, but it's interesting. I did have a picture of him in my head, and it was just very cool to think. I was actually thinking Briscoe County Jr.
himself. Thinking of Bruce?
Yeah. Bruce, it was Bruce all the way.
That's a very interesting choice. I can't believe I did not make that one. He would be, like, yes, in a version of this, an adaptation of this, Bruce Campbell would make a very good stainless steel rat.
Mm-hmm. Now, although, remember, halfway through the novel, he changes his appearance.
That's true.
Radically.
Yes. I mean, that's one of his, I mean, he does so a little bit throughout the course of the book. Like, he's always making changes to his face and everything like that. So yes, if this were to be filmed, and it's interesting that it never has been, even though it's been out there for a long time. But yes, it's never been an adaptation of it, which is very interesting in and of itself.
Yeah,
but
why that?
I don't know. Maybe because of his changing his look, appearance all the time, such radical extent that I don't know if he does so in the other books. I would imagine he does.
Oh yes, absolutely, all the time.
So Jim goes to work for the Corps. And quickly he gets kind of bored. Well, he gets a big assignment, right? He gets a big assignment. His yes. first assignment is to, he's found out that somebody is making a huge intergalactic warship, right? So his job is like, well, he's sent to do reconnaissance work, but we all know the hero's not going to just do reconnaissance. That's like sending James Bond out to just like, stay on a stakeout, right? You know, he's going to get they're going to get involved. So Jim gets involved, finds out, you know, he arrives at the planet just in time, the nick of time to see the ship like leave. So then his job is to track down the ship, which is challenging enough. The ship is, we are led to believe that the ship has been, is built and, stolen, really, captained by, oh, I can't think of his name. See, that's the other problem with the names, is that I can't think of it. I can't remember
his name.
Well, the reason none of us can remember his name is that he's really not important, because he's not the guy who's he's not the real guy who's behind the heist, right? He's not behind the endeavor. He's the face behind the endeavor. He's the face behind the quote unquote revolution. The real villain of the piece is Angelina. She is the woman behind the throne in this case in particular. And
Pepe,
right? Yes. Right. So so long story short, Jim has a masterful plan, uses himself as bait, right, for the ship. This battleship comes to get him. He, through his brilliance, ties them up and gets on board their ship, confronts Pepe, and sees Angelina, mistakes her for just a, you know, damsel in distress. Oh, he made me do it. He made me do it, you know. And she gets away, and then he finds out, of course, that she was the real culprit behind it all. And then he wants his next assignment to be to go after Angelina because she bested him. And he's told that he cannot do that, which is, again, when you're the hero, you're not going to take no for an answer. You're going to do that anyway. So he steals a ship kind of at the, you know, despite the Corps orders, goes against the Corps and tracks her down. And then, yeah, tries to track her down to this, tracks her down to this planet. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that in a minute, but so all the plotting and the mechanism, this book moves. I mean, it doesn't stay in one place for very long. And I kind of like that a lot. I mean, it's just constantly moving. There's moving set pieces almost too fast in a way. I thought about the halfway point, you know, after the ship just took off, the warship took off, I was kind of like, man, I thought we were going to hang around this planet a little bit and find out a little bit what's going on and see some, you know, personalities, but that was nope, gotta go.
You gotta go to the planet of Freiber.
So is it the yes, and in some ways it does sound like a Futurama episode.
It did. Yes. A lot of the names actually reminded me of Futurama. Good news, everyone.
The way these ships move effortlessly in just like seemingly a few days. Is very much like Futurama as well, from one planet to another.
Yeah, like I said, Harry doesn't spend a lot of time, like, you know, telling us how everything works and all that. Although he does when it's necessary to the rat's plans. Like, yes. This isn't one of those books where, you know, because it's in the first person. This isn't one of those novels where the guy goes, I have a plan, and it cuts away, and then you see the plan in action. No, we get all the details on the plan, yes. You know, beginning, middle, and then when things go wrong, you know, so.
Books are first person, by the way.
What's that?
All of the books are first person.
Okay, gotcha. Are they all first person from Jim's perspective?
Yes, okay, absolutely. Cool.
Because I know that there's other, you know, he's got a wife and kids later, blah, 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 other characters. But I didn't know if they changed it up every once in a while.
No, that's one of the things that you now that you've experienced this book, you know what to expect for how it's going to be presented to you in the other stories.
Yeah. And you really know what to expect if you look it up in Wikipedia, because I was like, oh, I wonder if we see Angelina again. And then when it says characters, the second one is Angelina DeGrees. And I'm like, well, I guess we do see her again.
Absolutely.
I guess
his twin sons, James and Bolivar, and his name is James Bolivar.
Crazy kids work it out. So he steals a ship, tracks down Angelina, finds Angelina, and then gets shot in the face.
Details, come on.
So I think it's not the face, though, is it, right?
He jumps to one side, deflects the bullet with his forearm,
right,
ends up in an ambulance, and as he's being wheeled into a hospital by a robot, he pulls papers from the side of the gurney and pronounces himself DOA.
Yes. And it is funny to me. So at this point, I'm thinking, you know, this guy who's so cocky, who said he's like the master con man of the galaxy, much like, you know, our good friend Star-Lord, right?
Yes.
Who?
He is the master con man. And I like that. And, I see what you did there.
Keep going.
He's like in the first few chapters, he's bested by the Corps. He's bested by Angelina with the warship. Then he thinks he's onto her. He's bested by, she's recognized. She's expected him coming. Like, she's seen him coming from like miles around. Like, so she shoots him and he's dead for all intents and purposes, dead man. So our hero, who's supposed to be the smartest man in the room, has been bested at least 3 times at this point.
Yes.
And so you're kind of like, well, maybe he's more like, at this point, I'm thinking, maybe he's more like Jack Burton, you know? Maybe he's more like the guy who thinks he's like the tough guy and the lead of the you know, Big Trouble in Little China, but he's really more the sidekick.
Well, that's,
he doesn't have another person.
But that's why I thought Bruce Campbell would have been perfect with that.
Yes, yeah. I agree with you there.
Because I literally got the same feeling that it was like, why is this just happening to me, you know? And I could see Bruce doing something like that. And it just happened over and over again. You know, he's all, you know, all like the first 4 chapters, he was totally in charge until he got caught. And, you know, they outsmarted him at his own, pretty much at his own game.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, there's not very many crooks in the galaxy right now, but so far, all of them seem to be better than him. Well, I should say there's at least 2 better than him.
That's a little bit better.
Yeah. Okay, so he's not really dead. I got better. He decides to use the reports of my death to his advantage, changes his look. And
graphically,
that's some creepy stuff that he's doing, making himself what, taller, shorter. Oh, like actually shortening bones, restructuring his face, trusting a guy to do this who's not exactly like a virtue of the medical profession,
right?
He discovers what Angelina's plot is on the planet. She wants to help be behind the scenes of a revolution. I mean, a huge revolution, a taking over the government, the main man of the planet.
Yeah, so, and this planet has only been in the league, whatever the league is. I assume League of Planets for a couple of hundred years, and so it's considered a backwater.
Right.
They even have steam-powered robots.
Steam-powered. That's right. So he decides that, yes, he infiltrates this group, gets close to Angelina, who is not going by that name, but yet we all know it. I can't remember what her name was. It's Angel something, right?
Yeah, it's another variation of Angel.
And so
we're going to get into why her name is that, of course.
So they plot out together. They seem to mutually fall for one another. And then as things are starting to heat up with the revolution, all of a sudden the Corps shows up.
Yep.
And she gets caught. She gets thrown into the core, or captured by the core, very much how Jim did in the opening chapters.
Yeah, and by the way, with her, she is less ethical. At least in this book, she's less ethical and more willing to kill.
Oh yeah,
she enjoys it. Not only does she do it as a ends to the means, she seems to derive some pleasure from it.
And she apparently was born extremely ugly, and that's twisted her.
And yes,
she's been robbing and making herself beautiful.
Now, I will say, with the current, you know, certainly point of view of the attention that deservedly so that women characters are getting these days, I will say that the stainless steel rat does not hold up extremely well.
No,
as far as the way it treats Angelina as a character.
Right. Yeah. It's 1961 and somewhat sexist.
Right. We will be polite and say that it's a product of its time.
Yes.
Even though it's supposed to take place in the future. A future which I don't think has a date or anything?
No.
Okay. I think Earth is mentioned, right?
Yes. At some point?
Yeah.
But it's good they don't set it at any certain time. You know, it's more ambiguous, right? Type thing.
Because knowing at that time, they probably would have set it for 1994, right? It would have been like, yeah, well, that didn't happen.
Yeah, in Bill the Galactic Hero, Harrison makes fun of the ancestral home of humanity by having people try and remember the name of the planet. Let's say it was Earth or Dirt or something.
Well, he's not wrong. You can call Earth. Yes. Earthworms, right? And there's no... Actually, another thing about this, too, even though it takes place in this galactic empire, everybody's pretty much humanoid, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's robots, but there's not really any exotic aliens.
I don't think there are any exotic aliens in the entire series.
Interesting.
There might be a few, but I'm having trouble remembering. It's just one of those all-human universes.
So how did you... I mean, I thought the ending was very sudden and almost felt like... It was just like Harrison just saying, okay, let's wrap this up. Because I wasn't prepared to go through a revolution of a planet. I thought, well, that's going to take, like, he doesn't really seem like the main character's not invested in this. And I don't really think that Angelina, although she likes power, I'm really not seeing her stay in one place very often. I don't know what's going to happen here. And then all of a sudden the cops just break in and say, okay, this book's over. And take her away, and Inskip has a drink with Harry with Jim at the end, and they just are like, okay, well, I knew you were gonna do what you were gonna do, and I told you no, just so you would go and get her.
Yeah, and the promise is made that Jim knows why Angelina is the way she is, he's going to help them
cure her. Yeah.
As much as change her personality a little bit.
We'll say enlist her.
Yes. Now, by the way, the 1985 novel in the series, the 1982, The Stainless Steel Rat for President is basically set on a planet where there is a revolution. The entire book is a Banana Republic thing. It's interesting.
Well, let me ask you this, Kirby, since you're mentioning it, and have you read all 13 books?
Not all 13. I've gone up to the Stainless Steel Rat Gets Drafted in 1987. Haven't gone past there.
Oh, okay. Was it fatigue of the series or...
No, the next one was in 1994. I was busy being a dad.
Gotcha.
a lot of my reading stopped for a long time. Gotcha.
So you would actually, you intend to continue the series at some point?
I do intend to continue the series.
Now, let me ask you this. As far as the books that you have read, are they basically, more of the same? Or is there like one that really stands out as this is the best one?
Let me look at this list. I think my favorite one is the one where we find out about his childhood. That's the Say a Steel Rat is Born that I mentioned before. My least favorite one is really the second one, The Stainless Steel Rat's Revenge, because he runs across these people who are really nasty, the mysterious gray men, and what they do to control people's minds is really disturbing. Huh. That's my least favorite of them, although I'll read it. Yeah, the copy I have that you can't see here, although you saw it over the weekend, at least Faber did, is a science fiction book club edition of the first three novels.
Okay.
Good old science fiction book club.
That's well, awesome. I know that I think all 13 have been, I don't know if they're in one volume, but I know they're a set that you can get.
Okay.
And there's a, like, there's a, yeah, there's, oh, I can't remember. I was reading it, but there was some collection that you can get that has them all. And that's where you can get the 13th one. Okay. I guess.
I'm definitely going to continue now that I've started reading them again. I'm even going to continue reading right now.
Well, okay. Well, he's off. No, just kidding. Well, Mike, what about you? Is it good enough for you to continue reading, or was it just like, you know, what did you, how'd you feel?
I enjoyed it a lot, and it definitely went places in my imagination, especially with like character growth, and because you did see growth in this, especially, you know, with Jim, of course. And I'm curious enough to see where the sequel goes and some of the other books. You know, I don't know how quickly I will pick it up. Well, I actually own it already because I had ordered it through eBay.
You ordered the wrong one, yeah.
No, I ordered the right one. The seller actually sent me the wrong copy. So I had to quickly get it up on my Kindle and read it through there. So now I have the second one also. So I'll probably end up reading it. It's in my library.
I must admit, as much as I enjoyed it, I don't know if I will. I don't know how likely I am to pick up the other books. I'm certainly interested in the character. I, like I said, I just don't know. I don't read a lot of actual novels, so I don't know the likelihood. And the fact that there's 13, 12 more is kind of daunting. Like, I'd be like, oh, I'd rather, you know, reread, you know, the James Bond books or something. But I will say I'm very curious. I do know that they had some for a while, the Stainless Steel Rat was a comic strip in 2001 AD. So I'm kind of curious about checking that out. They're in a trade paperback, I guess, that you can pick up. I'm interested in and if they ever made this into a movie or something, I'd be all over that. I would. Yeah. I would love to check this out. I'm like you said, I'm surprised they haven't. And now that, you know, Ash versus the Evil Dead is not around, you know, Bruce Campbell's available.
That's true.
So let's get on board. Let's see Stainless Steel Rat as a series with Bruce Campbell on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, cool. Well, thanks, Kirby, for the pick. We appreciate it. Our next pick for the book club, that's going to be, is that in August, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and it's your pick.
Wow, it is my pick, and we are going to go back.
We're going to the future again.
We are going to the future, and we're going to look at a graphic novel once again, and we are going to be looking at Camelot 3000 by DC Comics.
Very nice, very nice. I am looking forward to that. Some beautiful Brian Bolan art awaits us, and I'm a big King Arthur fan, so... So I've had this on my shelf for a while to read, and I have not had the excuse to do so. So now we have that excuse. Thank you.
It's just, it's amazing that you've never read this one before, especially with you being a comic book fan, B, a Brian Bolan fan, C, especially a King Arthur fan.
Check, check, check. Like a DC fan. Yes. Everything is, all the boxes are checked. And I did buy it at one point going, I'm going to read this. And yeah, my to read stack is fairly huge. So
that's what she said. So it's okay.
Bigger than some libraries. So
I've never heard of it before. I asked Mike yesterday about it.
Yep. Yep. It's really interesting. And this I remember picking up when it first came out back in the 80s. And it was one of those, you know, it was one of DC Comics' first maxi series. And basically, I think it took almost 3 years, though, to come out just because of delays, because Brian Bolan is not the quickest artist in the world. But, oh, it's so worth it.
So worth it. And I can't wait to talk about it and read it. So not in that order. So we will continue our book club in a few months. So we hope that y'all will join us for that. So. Thanks, everybody, and we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with the ESO Network Comic Report.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about Avengers Infinity War. Now, to start off, if you haven't seen the movie yet, then don't listen to this segment until after you've seen the movie, because I'll most likely spoil stuff, so you've been warned. So, Avengers Infinity War. I was pretty much ready to be sad walking into this film. I knew that much, at least. However, I didn't know what to expect exactly. My initial thoughts were either that Captain America or Iron Man or both would die, and I was so very wrong. Things I really, really liked about the movie. I enjoyed the flow of the film. I felt that it went well, especially with the extreme number of characters that were going to be in the film. I love the Guardians parts, of course, especially their interactions with Thor, which were hilarious. And Starman's geek-out moment with Spider-Man was incredibly funny. I also liked Nick Fury's small part in the film. I feel he went out exactly how Nick Fury would have gone out. Things that made me incredibly sad. The fact that out of everyone who was affected by Thanos' cleansing, Peter Parker's spider senses letting him know what was happening made me so sad. For all the others, they just faded away. But poor Peter knew it was happening. And that is awful. Things I did not like. I kind of feel like Marvel gave us some false sadness and they'll bring all the characters back. Since bad stuff happens, but the bad guy won in this superhero film. And I somehow feel like it's all going to be reset. Because generally, the good guys win, so we'll see what Marvel has in store for us there. Overall, I really enjoyed this film. I'm interested to see what they have in store for Avengers 4, and will we see Hawkeye? Since basically we've had all the original characters for the team left, and we don't know what's happened to Hawkeye. And then a few other minor characters that weren't original Avengers characters are left, so who knows what's going to happen next. And also, is Rocket going to be able to grow a baby Groot from Thor's hammer? Who knows? Okay, well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Well, last weekend was a pretty big weekend, certainly here in the Atlanta area. Of course, on Saturday, we had Free Comic Book Day. And, of course, Free Comic Book Day was celebrated all across the world. And I hope everybody had a great experience getting free comics and supporting their local comic shops, because that's what it's really all about. So I must admit, I had a great time at Dr. No's in Marietta. It was my first time there for Free Comic Day as a guest, and Cliff and his staff treated us all really well. It was great catching up with a lot of friends of the station, a lot of fellow creators, as well as meeting some people I hadn't, some creators I hadn't met before, getting some free comic books, and also supporting Dr. No's by buying a few too. So it was a great day overall. So again, thank you, Cliff. Thank you, Dr. No's, for the great experience at Free Comic Book Day. I hope everybody else out there had a great time as well. Now, while I was enjoying the comics, Mike and Kirby were enjoying Hulanta, which I actually got to experience as well Saturday night and then all day Sunday. This is the, I want to say, dare I say, like 15th? It's Hulanta? Somewhere in there, 12th, 15th, right?
Well, they've been going since 2005.
Whoa, okay, so 12th, right?
Yes. So this has been going for quite some time.
Time Lana first. I mean, Time Gate first.
Time Gate.
Time Lanta.
That'll be the next iteration, maybe. Yeah. Some things a little bit different for Hulanta this year. They were in a different hotel. Kirby, what did you think about the new location?
It was inconvenient for me, but I thought the facility was good.
Okay. Yeah. The drive was not fun.
Right.
You have to go. It's south of the city. So most of us had to go through the city to get there, and it's near the airport.
So I'm right on the edge of the airport. Did you look out the window from the consuite?
Yes. No, I didn't go to the consuite, but so you could see it right there?
Oh, yeah.
Ah.
When I post my Sunday pictures, I'll have some pictures from the consuite.
Awesome. And of course, you had to pay to park. So that's never fun. Even though it was
only $5.
It was only $5 because of the event charge. You didn't have to stay at the hotel. I think there was some confusion there. I know some people who did pay full price because they didn't understand that. But in any case, so a new venue, a lot more. This hotel is a lot more spread out. So in some ways, it made it look like there were fewer people there. And I think there were fewer people there. But there still were some really enthusiastic people there. And I know that they had one of the guests cancel, new Who director, Rachel,
Rachel Talalay.
Yes, thank you. She's probably doing another episode of Flash or something. She's constantly in demand. She's constantly working. So that was unfortunate, but she was not really there. She was not the one I wanted to see. So I was very excited because Louise Jameson was there, and you know, she's had two other opportunities to be at Wholanta, and they didn't work out because of scheduling conflicts. So it was great that she was actually there. Now, had you met Louise before, Kirby?
No, I have not.
So, and so you got a chance to meet her on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And Mike, did you meet her Friday or Saturday?
I got to meet her on Saturday morning.
Awesome. So, yeah, I didn't meet her till Sunday, but man, what a wonderfully kind and just wonderful personality she is.
Oh, she was wonderfully sweet. And, you know, half the time I was expecting her to pull a knife on me, but, you know, she was living up to character, but she was wonderful. She was completely wonderful. And no one could say anything bad about the lady. She is true class.
Yes.
Yeah. But like Leela, you're right. She's not savage, but she does have that kind of sparkle of mischief in her eye. And she'll give you a smile if you talk to her long enough, and she gets a little cheeky, and I did like that a lot. So so that was a highlight for me, not only for the weekend but for my life. Junior high me is just still over the moon and smiling because I had a crush on Leela. You know, I mean, who didn't, right?
Well, that's right.
Technically, she was my very first Doctor Who companion. Because The Talents of Wei Chiang was my very first episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and you fell for her when she was dressed up.
Yes, exactly.
she would be my second companion, but only because the very first story I saw was Hand of Fear, and then there was the Gallifrey one, and then right into Leela.
I'm to be honest, I can't remember which one was my first. I just know that there was this mixture of Sarah Jane and Leela, and I loved them both. I thought they were both fantastic, and I still do think they're easily Sarah Jane's my favorite companion of all time, and Leela, I mean, it might, you know, depending on what day you ask me, it might change, but she's easily in my top five. So that was awesome. They also had a lot of other guests. Richard Starking, of a colorist, letterer, artist, a comic of he's worked on a lot of Doctor Who comics, of course, as well as a lot of other British comics. And so he was there. Our good friend of the station, Kelly Yates, was there. I got to visit with both those guys. They're great. I'd never met Richard before, so that was awesome. Speaking of guys from the UK. It was really great to visit with Robert and his wife Helen, who came back to Wholanta after 2 years. Is that right?
Three years.
Man, time flies, right?
Wibbly wobbly timey, you know.
Yeah, to come back and visit Wholanta and visit us again here in the States, and there's great fun to hang out with.
Yep, exactly. And Robert and Helen are just the sweetest couple ever. And
yes, they are.
It's just wonderful just to hang with them and, you know, consider them my friends. They have a special place to me and Judy, and we're just, you know, very fortunate. You know, we met them through the podcast, and we're lifelong friends now.
And that's one of the things that's great about Wholanta and these smaller conventions like this is that you get to really hang out and really just talk to people, hang out all night if you want to, because they're in hotel environments. So there's no convention center that closes and you're left with somewhere to go and what to do and all that kind of thing. Everything pretty much stays. This had a extensively huge lobby, so that, you know, people could just hang out and talk and see each other and run across and meet new people all night long, all throughout the weekend.
Well, that's the great thing about this new hotel. It had the return of LobbyCon. That was the one thing that was missing at the Marriott.
Yeah.
You did,
their lobby is a lot smaller.
Exactly.
And they were doing renovations for a while.
Exactly. You didn't have that the last 2 years of Hoolanta. And when, you know, when it was basically when it was TimeGate, used to be at the Holiday Inn over by Perimeter, and it had a great lobby. It had a great bar right in the lobby, and people hung out till 2 or 3 in the morning there, just sitting and chatting. And a lot of times you used to have the guests hanging with them and just sitting around and talking. That's how I met Sophie Aldridge the first time. I was sitting, you know, she was sitting right there in the lounge, you know, talking to people and just chatting and laughing and just having a great time. And yeah, I felt like you got it back at this con.
Yeah, because I do understand that Louise did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, and the people are just, you know, Alan and his crew put on such a great show. And I feel fortunate that we were able to, you know, be part of it as Erstition Who.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we love doing is the panels, participating in panels. Mike, how many panels were you on this year?
Oh, I was only on 11. I think I'm starting to slow down in my old age.
Any particular highlights for you panel wise?
All of them. I enjoyed each one differently. I got to be talking about podcasts. I got to talk about Westworld. I got to talk about Red Dwarf, Game of Thrones, Outlander, Doctor Who multiple times. And we actually even recorded a live episode of Earth Station Who.
Yes, we did. That was a lot of fun. And we got to have Robert on that as well as former Earth Station Who host Jennifer Hartshorn joined us again. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. It was great to see Jen. And, you know, it's just always fun when we can get the old gang together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kirby, what about, were you actually on any panels as well?
Yes, I was on one panel, the Douglas Adams panel.
Very nice. That's appropriate for you.
Yes, that's pretty normal for me to be on that one.
Now, so how was your, but you went to a lot of panels too. So what were there any panel highlights for you as well?
All of them. I tended to follow you guys around for some reason.
Yeah, you're hard to get rid of.
The podcasting panel was pretty good.
Oh, the podcasting panel was a lot of fun, and yes, it was neat to be able to talk about all that stuff. And you will be able to hear a lot of these panels that we were on. I recorded almost all of them that I was on. And so those will be up available probably in the next few weeks through the ESO Network Patreon. So another reason to subscribe to our Patreon. It's only as little as $5 a month. You could subscribe and maybe even hear yourself up on the Patreon.
Yes, yes, because we will be releasing those. And anyway, the Hoolanta's, the only thing that was just a little bittersweet was at the end. There was an announcement that said that next year will be not quite, it'll be the last Hoolanta, at least for a while. There will not be a Hoolanta in 2020. They're going to take a little break and sort of figure things out. So there's a strong possibility that it could return. There's a strong possibility that it could not return. So if you're planning to go to Hoolanta at all, if you want to support Hoolanta at all, make plans right now for next year. They already have the dates. It is going to be the same weekend, the first weekend of May. So, and I believe it's going to be at the same hotel, correct?
Yes, sir. I had talked to one of the organizers there, and they had signed a 2-year contract at the hotel.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So it's literally the same weekend in 2019.
And I will say, despite the fact that, you know, it's a pain to get to, I will say that once you're there, you're fine. Like, it's great. You know, We didn't wander around outside, so we don't know about, there's not a lot of places to eat, maybe a lot of choices, but then again, I didn't venture too far away from the hotel.
Well,
isn't McDonald's within walking distance?
Yeah, no, actually, Mikey, there are quite a few places if you have a car, and if you are staying at the hotel, you have in and out access to the parking, so it wasn't too, too bad. There's actually quite a few places, actually a really good Chinese place called Golden Buddha, which we've gone to one of their other locations for the ESO Network holiday party.
They have a Golden Buddha there?
Yes, they do.
Well, that we're planning that now for next year. Yes. So, and we had great fun, by the way. We did a post-con dinner at the Vortex, and that was really fun. That's one of my favorite burger places to eat in all of Atlanta. So it was fun hanging out with you guys there, too.
It was just always great. And, you know, my head is still ringing from the Vortex.
So good though. So the burgers are so good. So yeah, shout out to the Vortex. All right. Well, that was our Hulanta report, our Hulanta Con report for 2018. So if you had an experience at Hulanta that you want to share, please reach out to us. Real quick, just to go over the rest of May. At the end of May, there's three conventions that you can find ESO Network folks at. The first one is right here in Atlanta. It's the 24th through the 27th. It is a big show called MomoCon. It's probably, I would say, like the third largest convention here, at least geek-oriented convention here in Atlanta. And it's getting bigger and bigger every year. So it may be eclipse the other two, but now it's then done at some point. But I will be there in Artist Alley with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler. Alex Autry will be wandering around as well, so look out for him. There's some other friends of the station going to be there as well. Kirby, are you going to MomoCon?
No.
Okay.
I used to attend MomoCon, but not for several years.
Yeah, too big for you now, right?
It's too big.
It's too big. It's pretty huge. It's at the Georgia World Congress Center, and it is a massive event. Also happening May 25th to 27th is Animazement. That is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Geek Girl herself, Angela Pritchett, will be there. And then May 25th to the 27th, that same weekend, is Comic Palooza in Houston, Texas. One of the metal geeks, Carrie Gordon, helps put on that event. It is a huge, huge comic event in Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas, and my God, the guest list on this is huge and impressive. So I would go to comicpalooza.com to check it out, all the details. If you're anywhere in the Texas area and you're a geek, you have to check out Comic Palooza. So those are the events coming up this month. We'll get into the other summer months in a little bit, but in the next episode. But right now, I just have to say that this weekend was a beautiful weekend with Free Comic Day and Hulanta. We love doing conventions. We love participating in conventions, and we love talking about them. So feel free to contact us, and we'd be more than happy to put you on the show.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Thank you, Kirby, for choosing Stainless Steel Rat. It was pretty awesome, man.
I'm glad you guys liked it.
It was a lot of fun, and come on, Bruce should definitely be in it.
Absolutely.
Yep, I definitely think TV movie, Netflix movie, miniseries on Amazon. You know, I think this all could work. I really do. So, and I think he's up for it because, you know,
I bet you could snatch up the rights of this series. Or maybe that's what's been difficult. Maybe they're holding out. Maybe the Harry Harrison estate is like, no, we want this.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could become the first ESO production on Amazon.
Yeah.
Wow. Ooh, that could be interesting. Kirby, look into it.
Right.
All right. Like Mike and Kirby had mentioned earlier, we'll be back in a couple months with our next Earth Station One book club. And we will be looking at Camelot 3000. So please definitely read along. We'd love having you guys read the books that we talk about and getting your feedback. So Kirby, anything you want to shout out about, sir?
You can find me all over social networks. But I'm also one of the regular co-hosts on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which I'm sorry is not an ESO network podcast. But
yet.
We're friends with you guys. You have to talk to Adam about that. I'm there every time we record, and we're currently doing, in the middle of going through every single Doctor Who story. We will be doing Hand of Fear next week and just continuing on.
That is awesome, sir. That is truly awesome. I actually still listen to the 20-minute Goodbye Time Lord, and you guys are great for the Doctor Who podcast.
All right.
And, of course, Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, my friend?
Well, with all this talk about the great, you know, Free Comic Book Day and Hulanta and then, you know, the Avengers movie, things have been kind of crazy with a lot of stuff going on. And on this show, at least, we haven't really got a chance to talk all about my favorite show from 2 years ago, which has returned to great, great, great glory. And that is Westworld. I can't wait to talk about it. I have to bite my tongue for on the ESO for what, about 4 months before we get an episode on it to talk all about season two. But damn, the first three episodes are strong, strong stuff. It hasn't lost a beat for me. Love, love, love this show. So I just have to give it a shout out.
That is awesome. I think it's pretty, you know, it's amazing. The series came back to in a huge way and it has not disappointed. We're three episodes in. And all I want to say, and it's not a spoiler, but wow. So, yeah, very good choice, sir. My shout out real quick is going out to the fine folks at Hulanta once again. You know, Alan and crew, thank you, thank you, thank you. I could spend almost an hour thanking everyone we saw. And friends of the show and new friends. And it was just a blast. We talked about it during the con report, I know, but I just had to double, you know, say it. I had such a great time. So, you know, definitely if you guys get the chance to go to Hulanta 2019, it's the first weekend in May and, you know, let's send it out with a bang. This is going to be, it's definitely worth doing, my friends. So with that being said, we will be back again next week when we are going to be doing a comedy spotlight. We haven't done one of those in quite some time, and we are going to be looking at George Carlin.
All right.
Yeah, that is going to be fun to do. So we'll be able to have a place for our stuff. We'll be able to, you know, be the hippy-dippy weatherman. It'll be great. So there is just a ton of stuff we're going to talk to about, and, you know, some of it might not be safe for work, but I think it's going to be fun. You know, definitely we want to hear from you guys. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Definitely want to hear from you guys. If you want to call us, 404-963-9057. We, you know, hopefully get some new people listening to the show after this last weekend. And if it's your first time listening to us, welcome. We'd love hearing from you guys at the con, and now we're seeing you guys here. This is awesome. And if you liked it, please subscribe to our show. We definitely would love to do it. We are up on, you know, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Plus. Not that really anyone listens to Google Plus anymore. You know, wherever you can find podcasts. There's a very good chance we'll probably be up on Spotify very, very soon. So, you know, we're going to be, you know, wherever you can think of finding us, we will be there. So, you know, please, if you like us, subscribe, take 2 seconds, rate us, you know, give us 5 stars. Or it's like the people were saying at the con, if you didn't like us so much, leave 5 sarcastic stars. It's always great. So, you know, thank you, Gary Mitchell, for that one. And, you know, leave a review, let people know. That's how people find us. You know, word of mouth is great, but also rating us and, you know, giving us reviews. That's another great way to help us. So with that, you know, being said, we are brought to you by the ESO Network Patreon. And, you know, you can help subscribe to the Patreon. It's as little as $1 a month. We have 3 tiers, $1, $5, and $10. It's not all that expensive, folks. It's cheaper than going to Starbucks, especially at the hotel we were at this last weekend. So, you know, definitely subscribe. You know, we give you new shows every week, and you can only find it up on Patreon. I'm very happy to say that the Night Blogger has just posted a new, brand new episode, his first one in 3 months, and it's only available only on the Patreon. So Patreon subscribers, you get to hear a new episode of the Night Blogger. So lucky you guys. And I know Drew and Cletus have a new DCU talking all about the final of Legends of Tomorrow. So that's going to be up later this week. So you guys got a lot of things to look forward to. So with that, you know, just go to Patreon or you can go to the ESO Network webpage, which is esonetwork.com. Doesn't get much easier than that. And if you click on any of the links on the top, there's the Patreon. There's also our Amazon link where, you know, go shopping at Amazon and doesn't cost you anything extra, just one extra click. And also we have a TeePublic store now, and there's all really cool stuff. I was actually modeling some of the ESO t-shirts that we have now over the weekend.
Looking good.
And both Judy and I had ESO t-shirts on, and two different looks, actually three different looks, because I wore two different ones on Saturday and Sunday, and Judy wore just the Earth Station 1 t-shirt. So pretty darn awesome. And these shirts are really high quality, folks. Definitely check it out. And we have, you know, transmissions from Atlantis up there. I know the 42 cast, Earth Station Who, all those different, you know, shows have different t-shirts up there. So, you know what? Show your ESO love. What was the coolest thing in the world was Robert McIntyre. He was wearing one of the classic Earth Station 1 t-shirts that had,
yes,
had me, Mike, and Bobby on it. And it was awesome in our U2 pose. So, you know, as Bobby said, because a picture of it was up on Facebook, Bobby says, I feel like a rock star now. So it was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, Bobby got tagged accidentally because of that picture.
Because his face is on the shirt.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Dude, we still get people coming up to, oh, Earth Station 1, isn't that Bobby Nash's podcast?
Yes, yes, it is.
Everything is Bobby Nash's.
We are all living in Bobby Nash's world.
Well, he is an award-winning writer, so.
He is, you know? And yes, we have to mention his name, and we just did that, so right at the tail end of the show.
Exactly. So with that being said, now that Bobby's been mentioned, we will see you again next
Disney
week.
Disney has hidden Mickeys. We have hidden Bobbies.
Exactly. All right. We're out of here, folks. We will see you here next week. Take it easy. My name's Mike Faber. We're gone. Peace.
Bye.
Bobby Nash, Bobby Nash, Bobby Nash.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057, and we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.